session number 9437, reel one.
Hughes, tape one. First of all, Elizabeth, could I ask you about your background? You know, whereabouts were you brought up?
I was born in Colesdon in Surrey and moved to Croydon when I was four or five. And I was the third daughter. My two elder sisters were a good deal older than me, and I had two younger brothers. All the girls went to the Croydon High School, a GPDS school. And I was by far the least academic of the three. And I was very put off having a long training because my sister had gone to Oxford, and then this was in the 30s, and then gone to the London School of Economics, and at the end of all that, she had got a job as a social worker in a laundry on a very meagre salary. And when war broke out, she was working at British Thompson Houston in Rugby, I think, using work that she'd done for it wasn't O level, it was matric in those days. More than anything she'd ever done since. So that
could you tell me something about your family? You know,
My father was very musical. He was actually a research chemist and worked for Johnson Matthey refining platinum. He refined platinum in the City of London through two world wars, which is rather peculiar, especially as it's in liquid form a lot of the time. And my mother actually was his second wife, the sister of his first wife. And, they used to have quartets on a Sunday sometimes, you know, and father used to read papers to the little scientific society. And,
Were you a religious family? Was there any religious?
Not terribly. We did go to church, yes. Actually, when father wanted to marry mother, it had only been legal for about 8 years to marry your deceased wife's sister, and they wanted to be married at a Church of England church, and they wouldn't marry them. And so at that time they went to a congregational church in Purley, which was some miles, and they liked the minister and everything so much that when we moved to Croydon we still went to this church in Purley. My uncle, my mother's brother, was Hubert Peat, who was a pacifist and was in prison in the First World War for his principles, and his principles sort of unnoticeably filtered through to me, and I really sort of accepted them as the norm. And it was a long time, I was quite grown up, before I realised that Christians weren't necessarily pacifists, because to me the Christian message is so utterly pacifist.
What do you think it is in the Christian message which is...
Well, it's love thy neighbour and do good to those who despitefully use you, and so on. And I mean, I have a strong feeling that good is stronger than evil. The difficulty, I think, is sorting out what is good and what is evil. And now I feel, and I suppose that when war broke out, I felt that there are plenty of principles for which I'm prepared to die, but I don't know which ones I'd be prepared to kill for.
Did you have much to do with your uncle then?
Well, he was our only... my father was an only child, and he was my mother's only living sibling. And he had two daughters who were the same age as my elder sisters, and they'd lived very close through the war, and most of the war. And my elder sisters were very close to their two cousins. And... the youngest child was my age, though I didn't have nearly so much to do with him because they lived in Beckenham by then and somewhere away. But we did see them. They always came over to us at Christmas. And mother was very close to our brother.
Did he talk much about his experience as a CO in World War One?
Not much. No, not much. No. Occasionally things would filter through about the dreadful time he had in prison. And I can remember him saying he was very disappointed with Bertrand Russell and the way he behaved in prison. You know, he had everything sort of... he was one of the people who was a bit more equal than the others. And various other people. But he didn't talk a lot about it.
Can you remember any of the details that, you know, what he went through?
Really, no. I suppose... No, he didn't talk about it a lot. Even though I had quite a lot to do with them when I moved to Letchworth after the war.
Mm. Did he discuss pacifism with you there?
No, not really, no. No, my father was not a pacifist, and I believe, that although I wasn't there, at some time, it must have been at the beginning of the war, I think, he and my father had quite a quarrel. But it wasn't earth-shattering, but it was... Mother reported it, I think. I forget how I heard about it.
How about your school? You know, what sort of influences did
well,
you receive there?
Well, I rather got mixed up with the United Nations, you know, thinking the United Nations was a pacifist organisation, and I used to go to meetings and things and presume they were. And, I remember being... people getting a bit upset because I went further than they intended to go. And I can remember going to a peace pledge union meeting and reporting it to the United Nations group at school, and they said, well, this isn't really anything to do with us, you know.
So you got the impression, did you, that they weren't particularly pacifists?
Yes, yes. You know, I was quite surprised, I think.
Yeah. Well, when you say the United Nations, would that be the League of Nations?
League of Nations,
the
yes.
The League of
That's
Nations.
Right, yes.
Yes.
Mm, yes. There was a junior branch, I think, of League of Nations, wasn't there? I think there was this branch at school. It wasn't very active.
Were you reading anything as well, which might have
no,
influenced
not really.
You at the time?
No, no. Actually, I read very, very little. Until I was grown up, I must have had unrecognised dyslexia because I read with. I still read very, very slowly, and as a child, I was still reading with a good deal of difficulty at 11.
Did you hear much about World War One? You know, apart from the fact that there were conscientious objectors, the sort of events of the war.
Well, we had some old bound copies of Punch, and. I used to look at those, and we had the bound volumes for the first 2 years of the war. Then apparently, my father had it had paid a yearly subscription, and they increased the value of. I think it was increased from threepence to sixpence, or possibly sixpence to a shilling, and they even if you paid for the year, they expected you to pay the extra. This shocked my father to the core, and he cancelled his subscription. So we have the copies only up to 1915, but I did look at them. Of course, the political cartoons of that time were very evocative, and the jokes too, you know, and the marvellous drawings. So I think I must have absorbed a lot. All my social history comes from Punch, because they went right back to the Victorian times.
You mentioned going to a PPU meeting.
Yes.
Did you belong to the PPU?
No.
Do you remember the peace pledge? Of course, women
yes.
couldn't, I believe. Is that right?
Oh, I think I signed some. No, perhaps I was too young. I might have been as old as 17, but I doubt it. I think it was before that. Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't. I seem to remember signing something, but perhaps I didn't.
But were you very much involved with the anti-war movement?
No.
You know, were you conscious
no.
that
no.
there was a group of organisations?
No.
Were you aware, though, of the sort of outstanding individuals of the time, Donald Soper, Dick Shepherd, and others? You know, did they impinge on your consciousness at all?
Yes, but not very strongly, no.
How about the events of the 1930s, you know, the Spanish Civil War?
Yes, well, one of my cousins, John Pete, was involved in the Spanish Civil War, and so I did take an interest in that. Also, I was amazed because he joined the army, and I knew how in the mid-30s, before the Spanish Civil War, and I suppose even then perhaps he was a communist, I don't know, at that time. Because I knew how it would have upset Hubert that his son had joined the army. And then, of course, when the Civil War came, the Spanish Civil War, he went out there, of course, he would have been a trained soldier, and possibly he knew that it was coming. And I know something else connected with the Spanish Civil War. Mother used to arrange for us to go to Christmas lectures, and I remember going to one at the Polytechnic, and... there was a German speaking. I can't really remember the subject, but anyway, the Spanish Civil War was involved. And I was rather amazed. I'd not been to a meeting like that where there was a tremendous amount of heckling people saying to the German, I don't know what his status was. You know, have you got people fighting in Spain or not? You know, and are you bombing and that sort of thing? I was quite amazed at going to a meeting where there was heckling and things like that. I hadn't been to it before. I must have been, well, 16 perhaps.
Do you think that, you know, the Spanish Civil War, a war of that nature, created dilemmas for pacifists, say, like...
Yes, I think it would have done. Yes, yes.
You know, could you... Do you think they were then beginning to distinguish a just war from an unjust war? Would that be...
Yes, I can remember Hubert Peat actually saying that... I suppose it was after the beginning of the Second War that some people, like Stephen, his son... were prepared to join something like the FAU, while he had felt, and some other pacifists, that they didn't even want to get involved with organisations that admitted the existence of the war. They wanted to make a complete stand against anything whatsoever to do with the war. I can remember when it looked as if the war was coming, thinking how difficult a pacifist's position was, and how, even before war started, and how really, only by going and living on a desert island and being utterly self-sufficient could you really separate yourself from being involved with the war, because of, I suppose it was after the war started too, when the convoys started going down, you know, and you realised you were eating food that had been brought at, probably at the cost of people's lives. But it did seem a dilemma. Then when my brother joined the army, I remember saying to him, did he feel that he was justified in killing for the cause? And he said... Well, he felt if they could make the war shorter, that would be a greater benefit, which, of course, was the explanation for using the atom bomb eventually. And so it was very, very difficult, and I realised the problems. And it affected me too, really. I was fortunate in that I was able to take a line of action that really I felt was, well, clean, if you use that word.
Did you consider yourself a pacifist at this time?
Yes, I didn't. I spoke German, and I thought possibly I could get involved with some interpreting or something, although my German wasn't quite good enough for that. Nothing turned up, and I thought of Red Cross work and so on, but I hadn't had any training then, and the idea of being a properly trained nurse seemed a very sensible idea because I'd had a proper training.
When you mentioned earlier how you were aware of what was happening in Europe, you know, during the 1930s.
Yes.
When you think of what Hitler was doing, you know, his expansionist movement, you know, the Rhineland,
yes,
and Austria, and then finally Czechoslovakia, did you think that he could be stopped by means other than force? You know, were you thinking this through?
Do you know, it's strange. I can't really remember what my attitude was. Because I was thinking about it, because I'd been in Germany for... I was there for 6 months when I left school, and...
What date would that have been?
That was 37, I think. Yes, it must have been 37. People would show you little anti-Hitler drawings and things, you know, and there'd be anti-Hitler clubs and so on. And, of course, seeing the Hitler Youth and... I think I remarked also about the pictures, the art that was sort of allowed was, I suppose, totalitarian is what you could dub it, because it was very much like the posters that Mao was bringing out in China later on. And I was aware to that in a rather child, you know, young person's attitude to it. I wasn't really politically motivated, although my father, although actually he was the most awful snob, was always voted Labour, which was so. I always sort of had leanings to the left, but, well, inherited leanings to the left. Although they weren't very strong, and they didn't carry through very well.
Can you remember the day that war was declared?
Oh yes, yes, yes. I was staying with my cousin actually, and I can remember I worked in Harrods, and going into work in Harrods. And no, that was later. I was on holiday on the Broads when war broke out, and my mother sent my boys, my younger brothers, on their bicycles to my sister in Derbyshire, and I went back. She stayed on there on the Broads, and I went back to London with my father, and we had terrible trouble with. I had terrible trouble with the blackout, because every time I put out anything to black out the windows, he took it down and said it wasn't necessary, which was very peculiar, because later on he had proper shutters made and was very, very particular about getting them up at the right time. Then I didn't go back to work. Well, I don't know. It's funny. I remember. Must have been before World War broke out that the children were evacuated. And I remember going into work and seeing all these children in the street with their little labelled luggage labels around their necks, being loaded onto coaches to go off to the country. Not very satisfactorily sometimes. A lot of them had to come back again. My sister-in-law, who I didn't know then, was evacuated to Eastbourne. Of course, she wasn't there long before she came back. And her mother, they lived in Walthamstow, and they moved out to High Wycombe, and she went to... She had some time in Wales as well, I think. And then she went to High Wycombe and finished her schooling there.
What did you expect would happen to you once war had broke out? You know, did you have any expectations, bearing in mind your pacifist attitude? Did you think they might bring in conscription?
And well, they were conscripting the men of my age, of course. They'd already been in for two years. Of course, the people actually of my age were the lot that were conscripted before the war, and so were instantly conscripted. No, I don't think I felt it would happen for a long time, by which time I would have sorted myself out.
Had you made up your mind, though, what you were prepared to do and what you would not do?
Not very clearly, I must admit. Certainly, I felt I would be prepared to join something like the FAU. I wouldn't have opted out of everything.
Did you know any men who were going to be conscientious objectors?
I think only my cousin Stephen Pete. I don't remember actually knowing anyone who was a pacifist and who had discussed it with me.
Did you know about the tribunals? You know,
oh, yes, I knew about the tribunals because... Yes. They'd happened in the previous war, and, well, I suppose gradually I began to hear of people who'd had tribunals.
Did you feel that the fact that you weren't taken before a tribunal, that you didn't have to make your witness, did you in any way feel deprived?
No, I think I felt very fortunate that I'd been got out of a bit of officialdom, because it seemed that people, the tribunals... often were very simple, and people were helped through them. They were treated very generously, shall I say, provided their reasons were reasonable. And sometimes, even when they weren't. Though a friend of my husband's, a girl, went to prison because... But then she objected more to being pushed around by authority, I think, than anything.
Could I ask you now about your training to be a nurse? This would have occurred during the war, would it?
Yes.
The early part.
Actually, my sister in Derbyshire had evacuees dumped on her, and she hadn't been married long. And so Mother suggested I went and stayed with her for a bit while I sorted out what I wanted to do. And I think by then I had decided I'd like to do nursing. And Mother thought that London was going to be bombed and it would be better if I trained somewhere other than London, and someone in Derbyshire had worked at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Birmingham, which was very new. It had only been open about 2 years, and I applied to train there, and I started on in January 1940. It was a four-year training school. It was a very peculiar hospital, actually, and I didn't get a very balanced training because it was so new. Because there were a lot of trained staff already there staffing it. And so, really, we didn't get the experience we might have done in taking responsibility because there were so many trained staff there. Also, it was rather a specialist hospital, and although I saw, for instance, the patient who had the first lung lobectomy in outside London, I didn't see all sorts of very run-of-the-mill things, which are sort of the bread and butter of nursing. Mind you, we were taught anatomy and physiology and basic things like that very well indeed, which I think have stood me in very good stead. But after that, I worked a long time on the ear, nose and throat department, both in the theatre and on the ward. And about 9 months out of 4 years was spent there. I did no gynaecology and no outpatients, because there was very little outpatients and no casualty. Or practically no casualty. So some of the important things I missed out on. And then even in the ear, nose and throat, I mean, we did terrible things like excisions of jaw, and very few tonsillectomies on children. Tonsillectomies on adults, you see. And so it was lots and lots of specialised stuff rather than sort of ordinary everyday stuff.
So how did that affect your situation, you know, jumping ahead quite a bit in China, particularly Yan'an?
Well, I felt very much deprived, really. Actually, I noticed it more in the Middle East, really, than I did in China, because by the time we got to China, the stuff I saw, I did mostly operating theatre work. Most of that was bigger stuff. Otherwise, it didn't come. And by then also, I'd picked up a lot of stuff that I had missed out before. And I'd got used to working in the very primitive conditions that, well, they got more and more primitive as time went by.
Yes, I hope we're going to hear a lot about that. Birmingham, of course, had a lot of bombing in the war.
Yes. Of course, not as much as London. I remember going home for a weekend, and I was sitting with my father and brother in the sitting room, and suddenly they flattened themselves on the floor. And there was a bomb went over, you see. It didn't actually explode, but their reactions were so quick because they were so used to it. Every morning, Mother used to go out. We lived quite near East Croydon Station to find out by what route Father could get to London. And, you know, every day almost. But in Birmingham, we did have one very big raid. Well, several very big raids, but one raid, I was on a rotor to go to a dugout hospital. And, you know, we were up all night treating the casualties, well, operating on casualties.
Were you involved with ARP work at all, or fire watching?
No. I think nurses were exempt from lots of things, you see. Like, they were probably exempt from fire watching. I must say, we were meant to sleep in the basement when there was a raid, and I always did go down, not because I was afraid, because I wasn't afraid. I think fear of that sort of thing is something, it's not you, it's something outside you that decides whether you're going to be frightened or not. But I used to think, supposing there was a bomb and I was isolated up there and somebody had to come and fetch me, that's very, very unfair on the person that's got to rescue you. So that was really my reason for going down. Also, I seemed to be able to sleep anywhere.
Were you aware at all, during the 4 years you were training, of any anti-war activity in
no,
the country?
No.
Did you ever see any publications or meetings?
No. I mean, actually, I saw members of the FAU, because the camp was only a few miles from the hospital, and I had contacts and did meet them. But I never met any active anti-war propaganda at all.
Is that how you came into contact with the FAU?
Yes, mainly, yes.
Yes.
And through Stephen, and I used to follow. Stephen went abroad fairly early on, and was captured in Kos. I can't quite remember the year. He was working with the army in an army hospital, and he was a prisoner of war from then on. I think it was, that must have been about 42, 43. I think it was when there was a feint, to try and persuade the Germans that they were going to attack in that part of the Mediterranean. But of course, all that's with hindsight, because you didn't know it then.
This camp that you went to, the FAU, or was it a
camp?
I
never went to the camp. No,
where
but
did
I
you
used to meet
people. Them?
Oh, they used to take me out to the pictures or something, and that sort of thing. We used to go to walks.
Did they tell you about the FAU work in the war? Is this how you began to hear of it?
Not really. No, I forget how I heard about it, about what they were doing.
How did you come to join the FAU?
Do you know, I cannot remember looking back. I don't know whether somebody got in touch with me. Somehow I heard that they were recruiting nurses for China, and I went for an interview, and I didn't know at the time, but the night sister from the hospital as well was applying, and of course she was accepted. But anyway, they had my name on the books, and I'd been interviewed. And later, just as I finished my training, they were sending people to make these MERA teams, which Middle East Relief and Rehabilitation Administration, which lots of different voluntary organisations sent teams to the Middle East for training, and they wanted to train nurses, and I was sent to be a member of this MERA team.
Did you feel that you needed to do something like that at this stage?
Yes, well, I'd come to the end of my training, and I wanted to do, well, the alternative would have been to have gone into a civilian hospital somewhere in England, And, of course, this was much more interesting, I must admit. So I was very pleased to be able to be able to go abroad without having to be involved with the forces or anything that I didn't really approve of.
And would it have been related to your sort of pacifist beliefs in any way, you know, the humanitarian
yes,
aspect?
Yes, the humanitarian aspect of trying to make up for the damage of war. But I don't remember feeling very strongly about it, I'm afraid. My husband felt very strongly about it. When he was in the FAU, they went to a hospital and he didn't consider that the work was... they considered that the work they did would have been done by soldiers if they hadn't done it. While I think they felt as FAU people they ought to be given jobs, they understood they were to be given jobs that wouldn't be done by anyone unless they did them. But I don't remember being involved with anything as highfalutin as that. I just got on with it because it obviously needed doing. And it was, you know, quite interesting.